Join me, Jacqueline Coley, on a brand new podcast, Seen on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that shape them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Seen on the Screen is available now. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, in a special All in the Family episode. I don't want any of you to worry. Mark, this is going to be fun, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, if it's All in the Family, I, Mark Ellis, get to be probably I'm Archie Bunker, and then we have
a meathead. I get the reference.
That is, of course, the dulcet tones of producer Brian, who is joining us for a very special episode of Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong.
Finally, you made it.
Yeah, getting you outside of the booth, as it were, and into the conversation. This is a movie that folks had a lot to say about when it came out. And there is a lot to be said for the fact that it is 38% rotten on the tomato meter, but it has a 74% audience score,
wow,
just shy of audience certified fresh. And listen, it is something that you should check out over at RottenTomatoes.com. The stars of this one, Florence Pugh. Her number one movie is Little Women. We also have Chris Pine in this one. His number one is Hell or High Water, a favorite of mine. And be sure to check out the Versus episodes, Florence Pugh versus Saoirse Ronan, a Little Women episode, and the episode that got everyone talking about how awful one of these names is. That is the Versus episode. Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth, Chris Pratt, and Chris Evans versus.
All hosted by Mark.
All hosted
written
by Mark.
Written and hosted. So I came up with the winners. I will tell you this right now. Florence Pugh versus Saoirse Ronan, because like I always forget who won
one.
5 minutes after I write it.
Yeah.
So Saoirse Ronan ended up beating out Florence Pugh in this one. I mean, a couple years later, I don't know, because Saoirse Ronan was the second youngest four-time Oscar nominee.
Wow.
Ever. Do you know who number one is? Here's a hint. She loves bow and arrows and tripping on red carpet.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes.
Jennifer Lawrence,
and
yeah.
I did that same joke in the episode. And then as far as the Chris's go, I'll let the audience guess which Chris I picked for my overall winner, and maybe I'll reveal it at the end of the episode.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, and nice little tease.
This is back when we had the Chris's debate, and then we were all shamed against it. But this is Don't Worry, Darling. Like I said, this is a movie that was the long-awaited, I guess, follow-up for Booksmart for Olivia Wilde. This is supposed to be her leaning into her auteur bag. And then it all maybe went right, maybe went wrong. But before we get there, Mark, what is the plot,
So Don't Worry, Darling. You just want the plot of the movie, right?
Yes, not please.
The plot of
not the plot
around
of everything around it. Look, producer Brian is so scared that we're going to get up in trouble. He's like, I not only do not want to get in trouble, but to get in trouble on the episode where I am a part of it, please.
That's why we have a whole legal side over here at Rotten Tomatoes.
I have it on good authority. Our lawyers are some of the most fervent fans of this show. So
they
I
may
think
be
we're doing
listening
right, by
right now.
Yes.
You never
Shout
know.
Out to our incredible legal team who has bailed me out of jail multiple times at 3 a.m. For Don't Worry, Darling, at least the movie plot is as follows. So remember the 50s, how great and idyllic they were. And you just had the men would leave for work for the day. The women would stay home and take care of the house. Well, let's put that setting into a desert and make people guess what the hell is going on. What are these top secret jobs all the men go to? And how come all the women seem kind of Stepford Wife-ish? And we have Florence Pugh in there. We have Olivia Wilde in there. We have some husbands, including the husband of Florence Pugh, played by Harry Styles, Jacqueline's favorite. And so we're looking at Harry Styles and Florence Pugh, and they seem to love each other. They have this great relationship, but then they all go to this mysterious work. What's going on? Florence Pugh starts to have these weird visions. She's seeing stuff. Is it there? Everybody's telling her she's crazy, and it just continues to unravel. And when we meet the mysterious figure behind this job that all the men in town have, Chris Pine's character, we say, wait, what is this feller up to? It might be no good. And our mystery continues from there. Twists, turns, ensue. A lot of people compare this to like a feeling of a Black Mirror episode. I'll say for me personally, I was surprised multiple times watching this film.
Wow.
Oh. I'm not the smartest moviegoer, but I was surprised.
Wow. Great.
Did you see this movie for the first time?
For the first time, I watched it 16 hours ago.
Wow. Same.
Well, like 2 days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't see it in the theaters, but we'll get into it.
Post-Vegas hangover Brian exactly. Watching Don't Worry, Darling.
Yes.
I did avoid this movie. I even made a TikTok about avoiding this movie.
Whoa.
I did. I was just like, I can't. There's too much has happened. Like, it felt like a Vietnam type situation. But I actually think I watched it the first time it went on streaming. So it was like,
okay.
The thing I appreciated about this for like 20 minutes, this movie was a part of the awards conversation.
Yeah, it premiered at Venice.
It premiered at Venice. And then for like 2 months after that, the fans, like the Swifty versions of this movie's fans, tried to pretend it was actually a part of the awards conversation. But eventually, I just hate when those movies, like, they linger around like an old boyfriend.
Mm.
And this movie did that. In case you can't tell, I don't think Rotten Tomatoes is too wrong,
too wrong.
About this one. I actually think, look, the vibes and the beauty is immaculate. There's not much else there is. And I mourn the movie that we missed. So I will kick it off by saying that I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong because it should be lower. But that is me being partially petty, but very much accurate. Mark, where do you live?
I'm not where the audience is at 74%, but I can get this movie to fresh. I think that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. I think 38% rotten is more of a Jupiter ascending score, the movie that we had a couple weeks ago. Uh-huh. And Don't Worry, Darling, again, I was locked in. I was invested. There's some characterizations that I have a real issue with. I feel like some very important characters got a little shortchanged in favor of just a little more window dressing that I felt was unnecessary. But I was locked in. I was hooked. I was invested in the main characters, and I was taken on a ride. And I think that the movie ultimately ended up paying off in a way that I wasn't expecting. Like I said, twists and turns ensue. I didn't predict a lot of it, and so I was a captive viewer the whole time.
What about you, Brian?
I would say it's right. 38% sounds about right.
Oh man, I'm on my own.
It's a pretty movie. It looks good. It sounds good. It's a movie. But
38 is not worth that.
Brian gives it the official notary stamp of congratulations. You are a motion picture.
You are a movie. You premiered. You had the sound looks good. You had the lighting right.
The acting color corrected.
Exactly. It came out. Yeah. It premiered. But the story itself, like we've seen it before, the twists and turns, I didn't really care about because I didn't really care about the characters.
Mm.
So. Yeah, I feel like I don't understand. I'll see what you say about Mark. Like, the audience is like 74%. Like, how can you get that high? I don't know.
Harry Styles.
That's the audience score.
Yeah, Harry Styles and like Booksmart hangovers. Yeah. And like, look, for a romance novel person, this is very romance novel-y vibes for the Gen Z kids. But no, I think we can do better. But don't take my word for it. Let's hear what our review curation manager, Mr. Tim Ryan, has to say with 2 Minutes with Tim.
2 Minutes with Tim.
It's safe to say that every movie goes through its bumpy patches before hitting theaters or streaming. But it's rare that a production is as breathlessly covered as was Don't Worry, Darling. So much so that, upon its release, the drama behind the scenes eclipsed the actual film. And critics found the actual film to be something of a disappointment, praising Florence Pugh's performance and the crisp visuals while bemoaning the uneven narrative and an overabundance of ideas. Don't Worry, Darling is at 38% on the tomato meter with 353 reviews, and it has a 74% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Linda Holmes of NPR wrote, "The issue with Don't Worry, Darling is that it creates a beautiful lock and a perfectly passable key, but when you put the key in the lock, it doesn't quite turn. You don't get that satisfying click." However, in a fresh review, Wendy Ide of the London Observer wrote, "Pugh is phenomenal, throwing everything she has into her role and carrying large chunks of the film more or less single-handedly." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, Despite an intriguing array of talent on either side of the camera, Don't Worry, Darling is a mostly muddled rehash of overly familiar themes. So that's Don't Worry, Darling. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark, two people who want you to keep calm and carry on. Back to you, folks.
As you Brits would say.
Yes. Also, can we also talk about the lack of punctuation? It should be Don't Worry, comma, Darling.
Hmm.
I'm not going to penalize it for that because the Beach Boys song Don't Worry Baby does not have a comma in it. So
yeah, that's the problem. It's a problem. It's a problem.
The punctuation in the title is
yes,
the problem?
It's like,
that's where it starts?
Look, this is what I would say to you. Don't worry, Brian. It's the darling is supposed to be this very sinister word of like, don't worry, like you almost childlike figure that I'm going to do this for your own good.
Yeah.
And so that needs emphasis. It needs the comma. Sorry, I'm not even a grammar nerd, but with this title, I will be.
I don't like punctuation in films since Mother came out and we had to like
lowercase
that it's Mother.
Oh, my God. It feels like that was ripped right out of the Honest Trailer. Let's go ahead and take it to movie talk.
Dude, Where's My Car? Another good punctuation movie.
Oh, with the question mark comma. Yeah, yes. There's a comma in it, right?
There is a comma. Dude,
yeah.
Where's My Car?
That makes sense.
And again, I'm not saying that everything needs it, but there is a certain reason why it's once upon a time, ... in Hollywood. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain iteration that needs the visuals to make it as strong as you want it to say. You guys just saw this. I told you guys when I saw it as well. I just want to add, this movie was a movie that feels a little bit like Vietnam. There was so much conversation around it, and I don't want to get into the details. Like, this is the thing. A director sleeping with their lead actor is maybe noteworthy in the world of, like, E! News or whatever, but that was nothing compared to, like, Spitgate. You know what I mean?
There was like, videos of, the press
like,
tour.
Like,
people watched the Venice yes. Film Festival, and people studied it like it was this Zapruder film. Like, did
yes.
Harry spit? Was he trying to spit on Chris Pine? Did Atlanta Chris Pine's hand? I could not care less about all of it. There's actually little Fs as I could possibly give. I did. Then he joked about it in like a concert like 3 days later in New York. So I'm like, this probably feels like Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like all the drama was manufactured, but I do feel like with a movie like this, it both enhanced and took away from it.
Yeah.
Because I think that it did increase the box office. This movie ended up making like 80 something million dollars, and that's probably more than it should have just based on the movie. And not even because I like the movie, but just like based on the buzz around the film itself.
Yeah.
Then you had all this extra thing that I think helped make people want to go see it, but it also took away from people's experience watching the actual film.
Yeah. Was the buzz what kept you away from it, Brian?
I think so. And I was wondering, because the Spitgate, like that could have been just a thing on its own, but there was already talks about drama on set and Shia LaBeouf was supposed to be in it.
Yes.
And like, tapes with him or Olivia Wilde came out and all that stuff. So it's like, what do you believe? All that stuff. But once the score came out, I was like, okay, I don't have to see this. There's so much drama I don't care about. And then the score says it's not even good. So I just skipped it in general.
Yes.
I didn't even know what it was about. I had no idea. I'm serious. I had no idea what this movie was about because you just had that like image of Florence Pugh and Harry Styles in bed. And it's like, okay, is this a romance? What is this? Mm. And then the spit happens. And then we're talking about serving papers to an ex-husband.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about magic salad dressing. And I'm like, what exactly does any of this have to do with my world as far as caring about a movie called Don't Worry, Darling? So I had no idea what it was about.
Did we get you to do the synopsis of it? You gave us the fairly good synopsis, right?
I gave you a great synopsis.
She already forgot.
There was
watching the movie and then forgetting exactly what was the
movie. I did.
Not
for
me. I
remember.
No. I was just making sure you didn't want to give us more of the breakdown. That's the only thing I was checking with. I was like, do you want to tell me more? Like, I'm like, did I read between the lines of what you're trying to put up right now? Like, are you trying to be like, Jacqueline, you forgot some because that happens, ladies and gentlemen. Little
like
behind
you forgot
the scene.
To not curse on the show.
The producers
because
here.
I edit the show
in the building. He's got a mic. Look out.
Anyway, sorry. Listen, it's a tick.
I gave a synopsis of the movie, not of the drama. Maybe that's what you were waiting for.
No. Listen, the only thing I will add to this for everything the good, the Spitgate, the who said who, the videos misflow, Florence Pugh showing up on a motorboat in Venice with a Aperol spritz and her little short shorts and her little coat with her grandma in tow walking up while they're sitting in a press conference getting grilled by reporters about why she's not there and all of the drama on set. That is one of the most iconic moments I will ever see in movie making. Like, that is like unbothered, but still fabulous to a level that I do not resemble that. I aspire it in everything that I do, because she just walked in. Like, there was TikToks of her just like, and they're inside getting grilled in that moment.
And so she didn't actually go inside to join the circus. She was just kind of outside enjoying a cocktail with grandma.
She literally did like the "I'm just here not to get fined" version of showing up for a film festival.
And you took your grandma to somewhere.
And she took her grandma to the festival. I heard later that, you know, she's an ambassador for Valentino, and like, obviously they had given her clothes to be at the premiere for it. And so she's like, "Look, I'm going to wear this fire black and diamond encrusted dress and be fabulous on the red carpet." And then literally there's also a video of her the minute that the film wraps where she's just like, "Can I go now?" Like, she literally, like, there's lip readers that saw her say, "Can I go now?" But that will forever remain iconic. So, Mark, I guess you think this is a good movie. Not a great movie, but a good movie.
I do. I think it was very watchable. And I feel like the majority of that, the lion's share of that praise goes to Miss Pugh. Mm. Because Florence Pugh, I think, is so, you cannot take your eyes off her watching this movie, because every emotion that she's conveying, when she's concerned, when she's worried, when she's scared, when she's just happy, when she's full of bliss, when she's panicked, she is so damn good. And that's not disparaging anybody else, because I thought most of the performances in this movie were really well done. Harry Styles surprised me. And their coupledom, I thought, was actually like something to like aspire to at the beginning of this movie, because you're looking at them and they seem to have a connection. They seem to have a love that is unique, even on their little Wisteria Lane street, where you have Olivia Wilde is in a relationship. Nick Kroll's in a relationship. My buddy, comedian Asif Ali, is in this movie, and he's great. But you look at like their partners and they don't seem as happy. They don't seem as like the perfect couple as do Florence and as do Harry. And I think that for me, watching this film, not really knowing what it's going to be about, what's going to happen, is you think, oh, well, that's because they're just the two of them and they're not having kids. And they don't seem like they want to have kids. And I'm like, yeah, that's how you do it, because I don't want to have kids either. And I live a pretty happy life, a pretty simple life, I would say, compared to where it's just pure joy, where as opposed to a lot of my other friends who have kids who have, like, you know, deadlines and bills to pay and all that stuff I don't have to worry about. So, deadlines. I'm in. I'm watching this. I guess I have some deadlines, mainly because of the guy sitting to my left.
Yeah.
But yeah, Florence Pugh is the biggest reason why I found this movie compelling, because this story could have melted into a bad episode of Black Mirror very quickly if you don't have a lead as captivating as Florence.
I do agree with that. And there are episodes of Bad Mirror. It's not all home runs, kids. Very Monty Python in that.
I agree with with what Mark says. Like, I can watch Florence Pugh in anything, and she elevates any movie. Little Women. I love Fighting With My Family. Have you guys seen the rest of the movie?
She's so good.
Dude, Hawkeye made that entire show.
Yeah, Oppenheimer. Like, Black Widow. Really good. Yeah. So that versus her versus Saoirse Ronan, I'm like, ooh, that's tough. Because I also love Saoirse Ronan. You put her in anything, she just elevates everything. So Florence Pugh is great. Harry Styles, I feel like, was very miscast.
I don't disagree with you, but I also know this is what happens. This movie, first of all, another thing I really didn't understand. So Olivia Wilde made Booksmart for like no money. It has like six producers on it. I think it was filmed for like $5 million. It doesn't become a huge hit, but it definitely was a movie that got a lot of people talking and a lot of folks liked it.
I will say briefly about Booksmart. That's when I realized I'm living in L.A., and L.A. is very different from the rest of the world, because everyone in L.A. was like, you got to see Booksmart. It's going to be the biggest hit ever. It's like, so good, it's so good. And Booksmart comes out and it does well, but it's not like a huge hit.
And not like, at all. No, they expected super bad. And I'm like, that was your problem.
Yeah. I was impressed with the movie. I liked the movie.
I thought it was great, But
I enjoyed the performances and enjoyed the movie for what it was. But I just, again, nothing about that. Like The Edge of 17, which to me is an infinitely better movie, also didn't do that well, because that's what those movies do nowadays. Like, anyway, only thing I was going to say about Don't Worry, Darling is when Shia LaBeouf pulled out. Say what you want to about Shia LaBeouf. That dude has greenlit power. Like, that dude is a name that's big enough to get, like, he was in Fury. He was in Transformers. He was in these big budget movies that have been number one at the box
office. And he was going to play the character of Jack, which is Harry Styles' character.
He was going to play the
character. So it's Alice and Jack is our couple, and he was going to be the Jack to Florence Pugh's Alice.
And there was a few folks that actually had similar issues where things changed, because this was also a movie that changed a bit because of COVID, because it was filmed October 2020 when they were still figuring out how they were going to film during COVID. And it also made the filming process significantly longer. So I looked at this, I was like, why did this film take 4 months, almost 5 months to film, even if you took a couple weeks off for Christmas? And the reason being is because they had to film it in COVID, and they were literally figuring out COVID protocols as they were doing it.
There was an outbreak on set. They had to shut down all that stuff.
I mean, it makes it tough. And then you add all the hot goss as to what's going on behind the scenes with the star and the director and you know, who's calling the shots on any given day. And it adds up to a lot. But I think the reason why, and again, I don't know how big of a One Direction fan Brian is. I think that the reason why I could enjoy Harry Styles' performance as Jack is because I literally could not tell you a song that he does. Like, I have no, I know that he's a multi-million, you know, selling pop star. Yeah. I could not tell you a song. I have nothing against the guy, but I just came into it like he's pretty much like a new actor that I'd heard of, but had never really seen before. So I'm just like, yeah, this feels like the dude.
I think, like, the character of Jack, if you really look at how awful he is in the sense that he's tying his girlfriend down every single place, but that's something you don't find out until the end.
Yeah.
The character that we see both in the simulation and outside of it doesn't fit. And Carrie Styles' look doesn't necessarily fit. And I think that has to do with the fact that, again, they made adjustments when they put him on it. Because, look, Harry is what made the movie stay active. His name, his recognition. I mean, the last movie that he did was with Chris Nolan, where he actually got fairly decent reviews for that.
Yeah.
It was Chris Nolan, I might add. So it's like,
Dunkirk, and there's a lot of people in
Dunkirk. You know what I mean?
And he wasn't acting much. He was just kind of in a boat.
But he got good press from it, and people were very much like, oh, okay, this is a guy that might have an acting career. They all have to start somewhere, kids.
Yeah.
And so
you can do worse places than starting with Chris Nolan.
And I've seen painfully wooden acting by singer-songwriter people that then try to do acting on this. I'm not trying to say this dude is going to be winning Oscars anytime soon, but I think he is much more believable and credible than we're giving him credit.
I'm not going to say he's Whitney Houston in The Bodyguard,
no.
Who is like kind of my gold standard for, you can act as well. Like, I'm not saying he's there yet, but it didn't take me out of the movie in a way that I think you might expect. Like, if you just, for argument's sake, even if you put somebody like, I don't know, like Lance Bass in there, like you put somebody else who's just like, oh, this is a famous boy band guy. Now we're going to put him in this movie, and it kind of takes you out of it. He did not do that. It was a little weird at the end to see him as this incel version of the modern day, who this guy really is versus who his fantasy is. Because it's like any movie that tries to ugly down somebody who's naturally pretty, like Bradley Cooper in Limitless.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, just get a haircut and go to a tanning salon. You're going to be fine. You know, or like Guy Pearce in Iron Man 3. It's like, I know you're prettier than that.
Absolutely.
Well, 2 weeks ago when you guys did Jupiter Ascending, Mila Kunis trying to be like the housewife. Like, she's too pretty.
Dude, there's no housewife with any amount of money that's letting that girl clean her house. Like, at all. They're not letting that, they're not letting that woman in her house because they know what that entails. You're on the lookout.
I will say, because of the character of Jack, like, he goes to work, he comes home, he takes care of his wife and all that stuff. Like, I just didn't believe Harry Styles in that role because he feels like a little boy playing, like, house. Like, dude, he comes home with a briefcase and a suit. I'm like, you're way too young for this.
So actually, the movie made more sense to you as the viewer, the way that it ends up, because we find out that, yes, they are just playing house.
I guess, well, now I like the movie.
So you love the movie.
Yeah, it made sense. His character makes sense now.
And also, let's give credit where we credit due. When we have recent examples of The Weeknd and The Idol.
Yeah.
I'm fine with Harry Styles. Harry Styles
yeah, he's
could be an EGOT winner as far as I'm concerned. But why are you laughing? This is accurate.
No, it's funny because I didn't see any of the Idol of the Weekend. I've read some things. And,
you don't need to know.
I don't think I need to see that, but I'm happy that I saw Harry, and this was my introduction to his acting. Because again, I saw Dunkirk and loved it, but like I wasn't like leaving the Dunkirk theater like, oh my God, this guy can act.
Yeah,
I wasn't leaving whatever Marvel movie. I think it was the Eternals. He pops in at the end.
Oh,
and the crowd went nuts. I leaned over probably to Jacqueline actually at that premiere, and I was like, "Who is?"
Yeah,
I don't know who this person is.
Yeah, I do remember this because we both recognized Patton Oswalt's voice, but it was but only one of us knew the other person.
You can count on precious few hands how many people recognize Patton Oswalt over Harry Styles.
Yeah, but we had that.
We knew it.
We knew that one.
Okay, picture this: it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let me also go ahead and say, too, with the story, because I think the story also kind of got an interesting rap because it was a story that people had read. This was a Blacklist script. For folks that don't know, that's the every year they put out the Blacklist, which is the 10 best, most liked screenplays of the year that have been unproduced. And a lot of really great films, like even this year, I think both The Holdovers and May December were Blacklist scripts before they ended up being now Best Picture nominees. This Don't Worry, Darling was a Blacklist script by Carrie and Shane Van Dyke. And people knew, at least Hollywood people knew, that they had made significant changes to it. How did you feel like the story played, Brian, like overall? Like, how did you feel about what it was trying to do, what it did do?
Again, I feel like I've seen something like this before. And I read that Olivia Wilde cast Florence Pugh after she saw Midsommar. So it's like the similar kind of thing where like Florence Pugh's thrown into this world, stuff's going on, she's like reacting. But it's like the whole story of Don't Worry, Darling. It's stuff I've seen before with like Get Out, with all these other things where I'm like, doesn't feel like anything new. And I don't know. I think you were going to say you wanted to read the ending of the original ending to see. None of it worked for me. Like
none of it.
The end, like I've seen all this stuff before. So it's like, what are you presenting? What are you setting up? What's this world you're creating? And I don't really care about any of it.
Well, this is what's so crazy. It's like Killers of the Flower Moon, to a certain extent, is stuff
changed a lot.
But it's also like stuff we've also seen before, in the sense of like the visuals and story beats and character arcs that it borrows. Because like Scorsese's come out and said, like, these are some of my inspirations. If you watch those movies, you're like, this dude needs to give over rights.
It's the same
like,
thing.
This is robbery just put Indians on. Like, you know, Native American, excuse me. But you know what I mean? Like, this is exactly what you talk about that. This is the thing. It's sort of like telling a joke that's inappropriate. If you can get away with it, you get away with it. Olivia is not getting away with it.
Yeah, if it hits, it hits. If it doesn't, it really leaves the room with a weird taste in their mouth.
And this is the second.
With this movie, I appreciated the story because, like I said, it surprised me. So I start this movie and I am thinking, okay, so clearly this Victory Corporation thing is some sort of top secret government project, and they've recruited the most brilliant minds that they can find, and they all have their nice wives and they set them up here, but you can't leave, and they're doing something with the wives so that they get off the scent of what we're actually building. So is this like an anti-communist weapon? Is it better dead than red? Is it a pro-communist weapon? I have no idea what it is, but it feels like they're going to, we've all been trained as cinema goers to think, okay, there's this big thing in the desert that all these guys are driving towards. And it looks like the secret facility. That's Area 51. They got to be working on something top secret. Maybe it's another nuke. Maybe it's a hydrogen bomb. And then you start thinking, okay, well, now we're having these weird things. And so the government, and so I just had the government in my head the whole time. It's like, they're the ones who are perpetrating, who are making these poor women, Kiki first, and then Florence, have these freak out moments. And now we don't trust them. And it the whole thing just being this simulation that like was like something you'd see in Black Mirror, I thought was just so cool because I never saw that coming. My viewership did not like, I guess my predictability didn't get to that realm where it could be out of time and place, where now we see her in a modern setting and we see cell phones and we see Harry at a computer. And you're like, this guy in his cleaned up is the guy from the 50s. So what changed? Well, what changed is that we're no longer in his fantasy world.
It's so interesting, too, because this does seem a movie where, like, if we knew less, it would have done better, because that experience that you had with it probably makes it so much more impactful.
I think the experience would have been better, but not as many people would have seen it.
Exactly. Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot more was out about the movie at the time of it coming out, whether it be from the Blacklist story, whether it be the fact that Harry Styles was in it. And so they were all like, what's Harry Styles' new movie about? People are really going to investigate this. They're not going to just like let it be mysterious like you would like, say, a Sundance movie that nobody knows about or that this, that, and the other. But I wonder, like, if it could have had that sort of like, let me figure it out as it goes. Because the other thing for me is I knew what the original ending was. It was much that Victory Project. All of that stuff was added just to get Chris Pine attached. None of that stuff was there before. It was literally just a bunch of incels basically hotboxing their VR so that they could, destroy the women who had been put upon. And it was much more of a revenge thing. It was much more that these men were wronged by either ex-wives or girls that were about to break up with him. The movie, the original script starts with him reading divorce papers and essentially tossing her in there as a way to like keep her from divorcing him.
Jeez. Well, I like that they kept it secret, I guess, from the viewer for most of the movie, because I enjoyed like kind of following the breadcrumbs, if you will. And watching this as like an experience when you slowly start to uncover what's actually going on, I was never bored. And the climax of this movie, I thought, was handled really well, because there's a chase scene where she's fleeing. She's trying to get out of the simulation before the agents can catch her. And it wasn't overly drawn out. She gets to the top of this thing and she's at the Victory Corporation headquarters. This is where, and I was so worried there's going to be some stupid fight scene. There's going to be some like the ridiculous like other. But no, we had a problem. Flo solved it, and we're done.
and DJ revolves it.
I like the nice, clean ending. Yeah.
I agree. I don't know. It's just, it didn't work. She's trying to say, like, that works for you? Like,
it's
this
a
incel
meal with
thing?
Chicken and, I don't know, what doesn't go with chicken? Like, something.
A lot of goes,
something
a lot of stuff goes
I know,
with chicken.
A lot goes with chicken. So, fish and macaroni and cheese. Like, it just didn't work. It's both of these things separate are good,
Thank you for saying that, because sometimes people try to, you're at a restaurant and they're like, oh, we have our tuna mac. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Not at this table, you don't. Get that out of my...
Well, but that's like, I think what you're saying is like, it's not even that there weren't bad parts, because you've mentioned some of the parts you like. They just didn't gel.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, now that you mentioned the Victory stuff was added on, that kind of makes sense, because it doesn't really go anywhere or do anything. And then when Chris Pine, spoiler, gets killed at the end, you're like, okay, what does that do?
And gives him an excuse to be in the movie.
I get. And his wife, Gemma Tran, I think it is, like, does the killing. Yeah. Is that supposed to be like, oh my gosh, like,
she's awake now?
Oh, okay. Oh, maybe, so she's in the simulation as well?
Yeah, maybe she figures it out. Like, that's the thing.
My read on that was they were in cahoots with this.
Yeah.
And she is just realizing that this man is feeble and that she's going to be the one overtaking the entire operation.
Oh,
that's how I read it.
I see. I read
Nobody stopped chasing her after dude's dead.
Fair.
Oh, okay.
Everybody else continued the pursuit. And so.
So Gemma's in charge now.
That's the way I read it.
Okay. That makes sense.
But again, as we know, I'm not the smartest moviegoer.
But it's your opinion, your interpretation.
Thank you, Brian.
And it's valid.
But again, they could have been a little more, they could have been a little more explicit.
I feel like if you're setting up this world, be a little more explicit of what you're setting up and just give a little more detail to it.
Yeah, because you want us to go into this world. We talked about this on our last episode. Some people are good at creating a world you want to go in. I think Olivia Wilde, and more importantly, the cinematographer, Matthew Lavitt, Lavitech, they made a world that you want to live in. They just didn't tell you what the heck to do once you got there. They didn't detail out anything that you were interested in. They didn't make the stakes of that world something that you were invested in. I think the two main differences between the script and the movie are this. In the movie, you are wondering, is she ever going to figure it out? Like, you were sitting there like, is she going to figure it out? And then you're like, quickly, is she going to escape? In the script, it was much more, is she ever going to stop being fooled? Because what ends up happening is even she gets out of the simulation multiple times and they just keep gaslighting her back into it. And every time she kind of falls for it. And so there's a much more of a groundhog type situation where you're like, is she ever going to stop listening to them and like really break out of this sort of thing? Because every time she, you know, it's sort of like The Good Place. She keeps figuring it out, but she's not getting out of it until the very end.
I like that she's her own woman in this, and we see her real self is either a nurse or a doctor. I think she's probably in med school.
Yeah, she's like,
she's a surgeon. She's like a surgeon, performing, yeah. Right. Like, surgery.
And you're kind of in that. In that portion of your career where you're earning your stripes, and so you're in the ER constantly. And I mean, again, you see at the end of the movie that she's actually dating Harry Styles' character.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, dude, you have Florence Pugh and she's going to be having that income.
Yeah. As a she's a surgeon. Well, no, his thing is like, oh, you're so busy at work all the time.
Yeah.
You're tired.
She's like,
make her your entire world.
Yeah.
When she's home for 6 hours out of the 3 days that she's home.
Yeah.
Cook her whatever meal she wants. Clean the house.
You could be a kept man.
Easily.
Yes.
Stay at home person. Don't call me. I'll be a stay at home husband.
But he just wants to.
Especially
watch
if she's involved. Are you kidding me?
Most men's masculinity can't take that.
If my wife was the breadwinner?
Yeah.
Sure, fine. my personality won't allow that because I need to work for my own. Like,
even if they were working, just the idea that the woman, one, makes more.
Yeah.
And two, is providing them with the lifestyle that they want to have. Like, imagine if your wife was like, you know, making $750,000 a year. Yeah, you're 85, whatever, is great, but it ain't. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you would still probably work.
Some men still want to work, yes.
Some men can't handle that.
No,
I can't handle that at all.
As long as I have enough money to engage in my childish day-to-day habits without having to borrow her money. So, like, I don't want to have to borrow her money to go get my iced tea in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't want to come home with a six-pack of Coors Light and she's like, oh, again? I'm like, this is my money, all right?
But that is...
That's why you're single, because you don't have to ask to buy Coors Light.
I refuse to take somebody else's money to buy my beer.
Here, I'll put it to you this way. There's also women who feel that way, where they would think they're in the gold digger situation. There was a recent news article where Gabrielle Union confessed, like, Dwayne Wade is minted. Like, that dude made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
He did okay for his career.
In endorsements. Yeah,
yeah. I hear he was pretty good. Look him up, kids.
And even though she's a successful actress, you're not competing with $500 million sneaker contracts. Mm. But she said she was just like, they split the bills because she wants to make sure that she is contributing equally to like the house and the mortgage and everything else. And people are like, girl, what are you doing? And like, I think it's like that same thing. It's like, I think that's that same mentality. But some women would just be like, money, please. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I had that in college like one time when I was like really lazy and I like just graduated. I hadn't moved out to LA to do stand up yet. And my girlfriend at the time, we're still great friends. She was like in the ROTC program and she was a senior and she was like studying and stuff. And she'd come home and I'd just be like playing my Tiger Woods video game on PlayStation at like Tuesday at 1 p.m. And you just feel like such a loser because the dishes haven't been done. Yeah. The one task I had to do. And it's like, you just got to get out of that mentality. But when you fall prey to that, and I will say in Jack's defense that just the voice of Chris Pine, the way that Chris Pine is giving this messaging, which is clearly like an alpha bro kind of podcast, like self-help, you know, tap into your inner man. It's no coincidence that the set design for Jack's modern day room has a huge From Russia With Love James Bond poster because every dude wants to be James Bond and has the fantasy. And then Chris Pine and this mysterious Victory Corporation promising to bring that to life. Sadly, that's going to attract a lot of dudes and probably dudes who are going to do nefarious things. Maybe not to their current girlfriend, even if the relationship's frayed.
I mean, you think like, they'd have a girlfriend?
To like, you know, the one you've been chasing. It's a scary, scary proposition.
And even more scary with the world of AI, like not the reality of this, but the images and mentality of this is not far from it. Like, it's going to get really dangerous really quickly with these people being like, they already saw something. There was a controversy on Twitter the other day where this content creator used, it was a cartoon, thank God, where he like basically made an AI semi-spicy video of a cartoon where he's like, maybe I like this cartoon and I'm going to make this. That's going to be a real person soon. Oh, it's already been a real person.
Yeah. I mean, I hear George Carlin's doing stand-up again.
Exactly. You know,
it's weird.
It's one of those scary things. And so I like those sort of harbingers of the future, even when they hit a little too close to home. Like Alex Garland's Civil War is one I'm really excited to watch, but also terrified to watch. This, what I really appreciate about the movie is how it transported me into whatever, you know, era it wanted to be. So when we felt like modern, we did feel... In their little apartment, we felt cramped.
Yeah.
And we felt like there wasn't enough space. And then when we go to, I'll say, the 50s for the simulation, it did feel like what, you know, you always imagine us looking back, not having lived through that time, the 50s were, where...
To some people.
Yeah.
To a certain race of people. And to a certain gender.
Yeah.
What I'm coming to understand, if I'm reading a lot what we say, what our idea of the 50s is really just what advertisers' idea of the 50s is.
Yeah, like the movies and television shows.
Yeah, movies, televisions, and advertising. That is the only place that this version that's in Don't Worry, Darling ever exists.
That's the genius of this movie, because it looks too like that, too corporatized or too structured or too whatever. Like, this wasn't the real experience of the 50s.
No.
And then we come to realize, duh, that's every fantasy that a guy now would have. It's like, you know, you want to go back to a simpler time, to when America was great. You want to go back and you want to live in that world where that world never actually existed.
Yeah.
And we're finding, even in this version, the genius of this movie is that it opens on a scene that looks like it could have been out of Mad Men, where it's just a bunch of dudes drinking hard and the ladies are having fun and this is our life.
Yeah.
And we, just as people from the modern era, are trained to think, I guess that's what work in the 50s was like when you were successful and you were on the ground floor of this really exciting, mysterious project. Yeah. And so that's kind of the lens that I was watching most of this movie with. And then Florence, along with herself, opened my eyes to what was really going on.
Open your eyes.
I like this movie.
You're I'm going on to your side now, because like what it's trying to say.
Okay. I got him.
A little bit. I'm not like, this is a great movie, like, but I understand what she's trying
Jack
to say.
Jack and I have been trying to win you over to our side, our respective sides, for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And the fact that I might have just done it.
Yeah.
That's just disheartening.
She can't, she's never going to let me live this. Yeah.
No, what it's trying to say and what it's like trying to do about the incels, saying like, what, I want to make America, go back to when America was great in the 50s, the idealistic world of the 50s.
Back when men could be men.
When men are men.
And women were subservient.
The nuance and subtlety of a sledgehammer.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not saying it's the greatest way it's being said or told or,
Come on, don't make me go in on this movie like I wanted to. Listen.
What?
So obviously you're being converted. So do you have a scene that like stands out in your mind? Like, I feel like I've lost you to Scientology. What? Like, I really do.
I mean, yeah, when they go to the future and you see... Like, I get what she's trying to say with the movie. When he's just like at his desk, Harry Styles is at his desk. He's listening to the little podcast, whatever, saying like, I'm not a man. You need to be a man. And so that sets up the whole thing. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. This is what you want. And this is what you're saying. Does it work out throughout the movie? No. Like,
that's the brilliance of the film to me is that, and that's also why I'm a great candidate for husbandry. Is because I'm not going to be radicalized by a podcast that says, you're not tapping into your inner man. You need to be like what men used to do. I'm like, that's what they used to do. Now you know what they do? They sit at home, they play video games, and they wait for their doctor wife to come home and love on them a little bit. I watched this movie, and I want to watch it again because I feel like there are a lot of hints that they leave as to where this movie's going that I'm just... You know, again, I did my olive oil instead of butter trick on my microwave popcorn, and I'm crushing it watching this movie, and Molly's asleep, and I'm totally locked in, and maybe some herbal medication kicked in, and I was really along for whatever the ride that this movie was going to take me on. And I think that it was partially because I was able to block out all of the gossip, all of the press surrounding this movie that was unintentional, and the fact that I'm coming to Harry Styles as a pretty much of a newborn as far as experiencing who this artist is. And so I'm not coming into him from the world of music. I'm just looking at this as a performance. And I feel like, even more so in retrospect, that Nick Kroll and Asif Ali were perfectly cast, as well as their female companions, whose names I don't have in front of me. I apologize.
Kiki Lane, that's his girl now.
Kiki Lane? Really?
Yeah.
In real life?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the Indian gentleman in this, I believe that they are now a couple.
Because Kiki Lane plays Margaret.
I remember reading a story saying like the best thing to come out of that movie was I met my partner.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
sorry.
And Kiki's performance, I feel like, got a little, It didn't. I would have liked to have seen more of her on screen.
Yeah.
Because she is sort of this warning of what's actually coming.
Ariel Stachel?
No, Kiki Layne is Margaret.
No, who's the guy that you're a friend of yours? What's his name?
Asif Ali.
No, that's not
He plays Peter.
No, it's Ariel Stachel.
He lives in the house on the other side of the street. But they're all in that little cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And so I liked that Margaret was this kind of warning, and I would have liked to explore that maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I feel like the movie served its purpose, and I can't stand movies where it gets too bloated at the end and it's this elaborate chase sequence. I thought that this chase up to the top of the mountain and the resolution were very clean and were not overly steroided.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that. I also like the scene where she's like, she goes beyond the little trolley where the guy's like, this is my last stop. And she's like, no, I'm going to step further because I'm figuring it out. And then she just wakes up and they just tell her, oh, you've been asleep this whole time.
I think if I had to have a favorite scene and moment, I liked Kiki's death scene. Obviously, I didn't like that she was the first to die. Right. It's so funny that role was originally going to be played by Dakota Fanning, because I do think it was a bit of bait and
Dakota
switch.
Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson, thank you. Dakota Johnson. And she had to pull out due to scheduling, because that wouldn't have been what the film got accused of, which was... killing, like, it's two tropes. It's like,
that's,
she's the person that knows what's going on. So in this, like, tech realm, she's the magical being that is able to see through the artifice.
Yeah.
And she's also the first to die. So you're hitting two tropes of Black people in movies.
Right.
And one failed jump, but it was good. She served that, like, I was in an Academy-nominated movie sort of vibes with that one. We could go on about this one forever. Again, I don't like this movie. I don't think I was completely eloquent about why I dislike it. It's just a bit tropey. The script was better. There was a lot more, I think, that could have been said, because for everything y'all said about, like, the Victory Project or whatever, those beats were so much better alliterated in the script, and they were kind of butchered in this version. But that is a conversation for a different day.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and break open our mailbag.
Back when Brian and I are going to start our letter campaign to the New Beverly to please put Don't Worry Darling on the big screen so we can watch our favorite movie.
You know, it would probably sell out. Like, I am I don't even know if I'm in the minority, but there's a very vocal group of people that live for that movie. But some people like candy corn. Moving on to the mailbag. Ketchup crew member Dustin Mills. Picture this. Illinois, snow day, circa 2004. 17-year-old me is stuck at home and Eurotrip is playing all day on HBO. At the time, I thought it was the greatest movie of all time. At 47% RT score seems really good. And a 75% audience score seems amazing for some movie. Is that really good? Well, maybe not. I haven't seen I've not seen it since, and I've attempted to rewatch it. I have attempted to rewatch some of my teenage favorites, mostly to disgust and disappointment, American Pie films exempt. I really got to know what's going on. Help. So I guess he doesn't like it now.
No. So Dustin is saying that a lot of those movies from that era haven't held up, but he has yet to rewatch his precious Eurotrip.
Gotcha.
And I'll tell you this, Dustin. Jacqueline and I got to do a fun project with the good folks at National Lampoon.
Yes, we did.
And involving a lot of, like, their great comedy library. And Eurotrip was one of the movies that I'd never seen before. Mm. So just to get ready for, like, the day of shooting, just kind of get into, like, a comedy mindset, I decided to watch a comedy I had not yet seen. Eurotrip was the play, and I laughed my ass off.
Really?
It is so funny. Every scene has these great, like, random characters that show up. Fred Armisen.
Yeah.
Matt Damon shows up.
The Matt Damon of it.
Yeah. And Scotty doesn't know.
It was so funny. Yeah. I was blown away. So I think you're going to rewatch it and actually agree with the audience much more than the tomato meter. That's for me.
So you think it holds up as time has gone by?
I guess so, but I never saw it back in the day.
I know Road Trip does. Road Trip still holds up for me.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched Road Trip recently. I haven't watched Rio Trip recently. I think I even said this on that thing when we were chatting about it, but it is still great.
Yeah. That's why I never saw Eurotrip, is because it felt like it was just going to be this pale imitation of Road Trip.
Yeah.
And I liked Road Trip a lot, but I think Eurotrip might actually be funny.
Yeah.
Nah, I love Road Trip more, but I love Eurotrip too. Yeah. It was a perfect time for me. I was 14 when it came out.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is my movie of just, like,
14?
To quote. Yeah.
I was 43 when I watched it, and I was like, this is my movie.
It is still your movie.
I was on a Eurotrip. This was my senior year when I was literally in France studying, 2004.
You got us both. Wow.
The next year I graduated. Anyway, that is crazy.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, like, I brought up this mailbag because I know going back to the early 2000s comedies, like, does it hold up? Is it still funny? And I feel like Eurotrip is. And but there's some, I don't know which movies that where I'm like watching it again, like Waiting. Have you guys seen Waiting?
I still like Waiting, but I waited tables.
Okay. See, that's a good one.
I haven't seen Waiting in a long time. And I remember the appeal was it had Dane Cook in it for me. And
really?
It was just MySpace days on screen.
Yeah. And I was just excited to see this comedian that I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I had just coming off Harmful of Swallowed, which is still one of the great comedy albums of the century. And yeah, so there's that'd be like a fun episode to just like, we just take a bunch of these like 2000s era, aughts comedies, and see what really holds up and see what maybe isn't quite as fresh.
I mean, I don't disagree because I would put Outside Providence in there. That's Farley Brothers.
Farley Brothers.
Fairly Brothers.
Alec Baldwin, I think.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin and I forget his name, but he's a Scientologist.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
That's a lot.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
I can't remember his name now to think of it. I'm pretty sure. But yeah, he was part of that. It was sort of like 90s vibes. It was of a time. But that is it for us this week. Brian, anything you want folks to know about besides all the work you do here?
Just follow Rotten Tomatoes. Don't follow me on Instagram or anything. I just like to live a private life. But check out.
You have a cute doggy.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes
is
wrong.
Oh, you should check out the Awards Tour podcast that we both work on together, which I think our next episode is going to be getting close to the wrap up of award season.
Yeah.
By the time this one comes out.
Yeah, there's some big award show. I can't remember what it's called.
It's the, Oscars.
Is the Jimmy something like that.
But working with Jacqueline, oh my gosh. Like one-on-one working with Jacqueline is like working with Tasmanian Devil. Like trying to get a hold of her for anything. Like she's great. I love working with her, but
this is fair. I think that is accurate. When I said I was the red panda, listen, I was self-aware. Mark, where can folks find you? You got some comedy shows coming up.
I was going to say, if working with her is like Tasmanian Devil, I'm probably like, what's the sleepiest character that you have to like wake up from Looney Tunes?
A hibernating animal.
Pretty much.
I'm like, Eeyore. Eeyore with less words.
Thanks for noticing me. My schedule's about to heat up actually on the road. So I'm going to be in Vegas. And then I have a couple of fun stuff I'm doing South by Southwest and at CinemaCon. And then I also have road dates. Got a Boston coming up soon. Have a New York coming up soon, a Chicago, a Portland, a bunch of other places. So just go to my website, markellis.live, or follow me at markellislive.
Lovely. All right, folks. Well, that is it for us on this episode of Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. But maybe you can send Brian on another nostalgia hit if you email us at rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. Mark, what is up for us next
week? I'll put it in the Eurotrip category because I have not seen this movie yet, so this could be the Don't Worry Darling of 2 weeks from now.
Not a chance.
Teen Witch. Never gonna
be the same again.
Teen Witch.
It's an experience.
I may have never even heard of this movie. Again. So
really?
From 1989, 90.
You haven't seen that one scene that everyone talks about?
I probably have.
Oh, okay.
I probably have, but I'm going to sit down and watch it with Molly the Wonder Dog for the first time in a couple weeks. So
a low-key musical. I just want to know, back when they used to make musicals that you didn't know were musicals.
The opening.
They would sneak
in case you can't tell, I'm a fan. All right. In two weeks, we have Teen Witch, 1989, Robin Lively, Zelda, from Poltergeist, Servant
Oh,
vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see y'all then on behalf of Brian, Mark, myself. We'll see y'all next time.
Keep calm and carry on.